So a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction, text number, what's the text number?
Verse hasn't been written.
18. Okay. So we won't even bother reading the Sanskrit then. Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow, very much distressed. With tears in her eyes, she appeared before Lord Brahma and told him about her misfortune. Text 19. Brahma tad upadharyata sahasavais tasya saha jagama satri nayanas tiram shira payonide. Thereafter, having heard of the distress of Mother Earth, Lord Brahma with Mother Earth, Lord Shiva, and all the other demigods approached the shore of the ocean of milk. Purport. After Lord Brahma understood the precarious condition of the earth, he first visited the demigods headed by Lord Indra, who were in charge of the various affairs of the universe, and Lord Shiva, who was responsible for annihilation. Both maintenance and annihilation go on perpetually under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4.8, Paritranaya Sarunam Vinashaya Chajiskritam. Those who are obedient to the laws of God are protected by different servants and demigods, whereas those who are undesirable are vanquished by Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma first met all the demigods, including Lord Shiva. Then along with Mother Earth, they went to the shore of the ocean of milk where Lord Vishnu lies on the white sand island, white island, Swetadvip. Mom Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Bhutte Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatundeve Gauravani Vricharne Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskyadhyade Sitarne. Now, I can't say much about this verse except for that this is a example of good management. That in the universe, the demigods, they're managing everything, but they're doing it better than we can. Therefore, we shouldn't be too anxious to go to the heavenly planets, because who knows what we might do there. But here, before making a quick decision, Brahma, after hearing of Bhumi, he didn't immediately take out his computer, type in a few email messages, and thought, well, it's all done. And he actually went to the persons in charge of these affairs, consulted with them, and figured out the best way of handling the situation would be to go to Lord Vishnu. The advantage of going to Lord Vishnu is that he's all-powerful. Well, Brahma and Shiva and everyone else are only partially powerful. Therefore, ultimately, that's our conclusion. Because even in our management, if we ultimately don't take shelter of Lord Vishnu, and we take shelter of our own little limited power, then ultimately we'll be a failure. The difference between the demigods and the demons, like here, Kamsa is a major player in the demons. Of course, we have many other demons in the 10th canto, such as Palambasura, Vatsasura, Agasura, Trinavarta, Putana, Jarasandha, Deinukasura. We can go on the whole class. So the difference between them and the demigods is that the demigods take shelter of Lord Vishnu, while the demons never take shelter of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, although it may seem that Lord Vishnu is partial, in the seventh canto we've read that Hiranyakashipu was complaining that Lord Vishnu is just like a little child. That's what he said. He's just like a little child. A little child, if you give him a lot, a piece of candy, which is worth 10 cents, suddenly he becomes your ally. It doesn't take much to convince a little child to be on your side. Similarly said, the demigods, they've given Lord Vishnu a little piece of candy, and suddenly he's become on their side and he's killed my little baby brother. But actually, that's not exactly what happens. What happened was, the demigods, they always take shelter of Lord Vishnu, and therefore Lord Vishnu comes and protects them. On the other hand, the demons, they always oppose whatever Vishnu does. If Vishnu says right, they say left. And Lord Vishnu, understanding this mentality, when the demigods and the demons took Vasuki to the Mandara Mountain, or actually they took the Mandara Mountain to the middle of the ocean of milk. Here, the ocean of milk is described also. One thing we should know, we should be happy about, is that from our information, the ocean of milk is neither homogenized nor pasteurized. So if you go to the ocean of milk, you could drink it, actually. You probably wouldn't even have to boil it three times. Of course, this is after Lord Shiva had taken out the Kalakuta poison from the ocean milk. So before that, the ocean milk may have tasted a little strange sometimes. In any case, they went to the shore of the ocean of milk with Mandara Mountain, put it in the ocean of milk, and it sank. Mandara Mountain is not exactly an ordinary mountain. It's made out of gold. Therefore, it's a little heavy. And even great demigods such as Lord Indra and Lord Shiva found it difficult to pick up such a heavy mountain. In any case, it sank into the ocean of milk, and Korma came. And he put the Mandara Mountain on his back, because it seems that he had an itching sensation on his back and he needed something substantial to scratch it. So if you get a mountain of gold 100,000 yojanas or 800,000 miles high, even the back of God is sufficient to scratch his back. If anyone can calculate how much the Mountain Mandara Mountain is worth now in gold, perhaps you will become very much enthusiastic to go there. In any case, they put it on his back and they took Vasuki as the churning rod and they turned the mountain back and forth. But the question was, who was going to take which side of the snake? Now, Vasuki is a powerful snake. And he breathes out large amounts of smoke and fire. So Lord Vishnu reasoned that whatever we do, the demons will want to do the opposite. So immediately he demanded, or he took the front of the snake, which was breathing out the fire and the smoke, and all the demigods followed him. And as soon as the demons saw this, immediately they wanted that part, because they were less intelligent. So Lord Vishnu said, all right, what can you do? You know, we don't want to fight with the demons. We made an alliance. Yes, you can take this part. Of course, so the demons took that part of Vasuki, and all he was doing the whole time they were churning was breathing out smoke and fire, and they all got burnt. Therefore, if you know someone's going to say exactly the opposite of what you're doing or do exactly the opposite of what you tell them, then you just tell them exactly the opposite of what you want them to do. And then they'll do exactly the opposite, and then they'll do what actually you want them to do. So that's the difference between the demons and the devotees. The demons will do exactly the opposite of what Lord Vishnu wants them to do. And the devotees, they try to find out what Krishna wants them to do, and they try to do that to please Krishna. Therefore, if a demon does what Krishna wants them to do, then he's actually devoted. Prahlada, it's not a question of birth, it's a question of activity. Therefore, we honor Lord Prahlad Maharaj as one of our Mahajans, although theoretically he was born in a demoniac family. Probably nowadays people would consider that he was, well, I don't know, some temples maybe they wouldn't even let him in. You never know. In any case, although he was born as a demon, still he was a great devotee. And on the other hand, devotees sometimes, they'll act like demons and Krishna will have to chastise them, such as Lord Indra. So Krishna is impartial, actually. It is simply according to one's dealings that Krishna either reciprocates as a devotee with his devotees, or sometimes he chastises those who are demons. Therefore, it is said that even the demons, they have faith that Krishna will not attack them unless there is some reason to do so. And the demigods had so much confidence in Krishna, it says, that they left their doors unlocked, even when they were fighting with the demons. Of course, nowadays, it wouldn't be a good idea, even for the demigods, to leave their doors unlocked. But that indicates faith in Krishna. And Krishna is very consistent. So here are Brahma, Lord Shiva, the demigods. They have some problem and they're going to approach Lord Vishnu. So this is a very good example. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Chaitasa sarva karmani maya sanyasi matparaha pudiyogama pashitya machita sadatambhava. And all activities depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. So this is the formula for becoming conscious of Krishna, for becoming Krishna conscious. And even the demigods, they follow that formula. It's not that Brahma said, well, why should we bother going all the way to the ocean of milk? We've been there so many times before. We've already stocked up on our milk supply here in Brahmaloka. There's no need to go to the ocean of milk. I'll simply sit here and meditate on Vishnu. And Vishnu is everywhere. So what's the difference? No, they decided that they'd personally go. They'd show some concern. Not that here's Bhumi, she's come, she's crying. And, you know, I feel sorry for her, but you know, I got a lot of things to do. If you were Brahma, you'd have a lot of things to do too. So maybe tomorrow when I wake up, I'll see what I can do for Bhumi. Now, immediately, out of concern for the earth, and I guess earth is Bhumandala, it's not just this little tiny earth that we think is earth, he went with the demigods. And they couldn't see Vishnu because I guess they were on the shore of the ocean of milk, and Lord Vishnu is on Svetadvipa, which is an island in the ocean of milk. And it seems that sometimes even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva can approach that island. Therefore, they had to pray. They offered Purusha Shukta prayers, as we'll find out, just to invoke Lord Vishnu's compassion. It seems that the demigods and Vishnu, they all have the same interest. And therefore, when there is some problem, it's not that Vishnu says, well, all right, here I am, I'm asleep, and you come and wake me up all the time. Can't you see a man? Can't you let a person rest for a little while? I mean, the material world's bad, but, you know, I need some sleep, too. No, as soon as there was some concern by Lord Brahma and all the demigods, that was very effective. It's not that Lord Brahma came, couldn't get any help from the demigods, because they said, oh, the milk, this Bhumi, she's always complaining. No one could ever satisfy her. You go and complain. I mean, we're tired of complaining to Vishnu all the time. So when Lord Vishnu understood that all the demigods, that it was a universal concern, then he also became very concerned. so much concern that he promised that he'd personally come and rectify the situation. So, of course, this doesn't happen very often, as far as we understand, that the demigods are constantly leaving their homes and families, and more or less they've settled down at the ocean of milk, and they just spend all their time complaining to Vishnu. You know, birth, death, old age, and disease, that's bad enough, but let me tell you about this story and that story. And it gets worse as we go on. No, it's a rare occurrence when all the demigods in the universe, they get together and they personally go and try to appease Lord Vishnu. But then Lord Vishnu, he reciprocates and he comes. Of course, we find that many times the demigods do appeal to Lord Vishnu, but not necessarily by going to the shore of the ocean of milk. Sometimes they just offer prayers or they whatever. And then Lord Vishnu comes. Just like in the fight, after the churning of the ocean of milk, to get the Amrita, the nectar of immortality, which was given ultimately by Dhanvantari, so it must have been good. Then there was a big fight between the demons and the demigods. And ultimately Lord Vishnu came riding on the back of Garuda and annihilated the demons. This is like a universal pastime that goes on. There's always the devotees and there's always the demons, and they never get together. Except nowadays, sometimes the devotees are thinking, well, maybe we should get good propaganda, good publicity, and therefore make some alliance with the demons. But this is not a very good idea for the demigods to make alliance with demons, because inevitably the demigods turn into demons when they do so. But we can see that the fight between the demigods and the demons is a universal and perpetual fight. That the demigods cannot associate in a favorable way with the demons, or else they themselves will become demons, and the demons never favorably associate with the demigods, otherwise they'll become demigods. Like Bali Maharaj was a demon, but by good association became a demigod. Just like sometimes the devotees, they think, let me send my child to the materialistic schools, and after some time when they grow up, if they want to, they can become a devotee. But we never find the demons thinking, well, let me send my children to the Gurukul and let them grow up as devotees, and afterwards when they want to, when they grow up, maybe when they want to, they can become demons if they want. Therefore, we should not have too much faith in those who are materialistic persons, although we respect all living entities as devotees, as potentially servants of Krishna, because most people are innocent. But it's still, one should be careful about association, that one does not become affected by such association. Therefore, the devotees, they mainly associate with devotees, and when they're preaching, they associate with innocent people. Not with people who are most receptive to become devotees. They don't associate with hardcore demons whose only objective is to make the devotees into demons too, along with everyone else. And therefore, there's a fourth category called upeksha, bali and dvitsatsu. Those who are envious of Krishna, generally we try to avoid them, or we make plans to defeat their demoniac propaganda, if not their demoniac behavior, their own demoniac mentality. But generally, born-again demons are who are born again and again as demons, it is very hard to convert them. Only the most powerful devotee can do so. Therefore, we should generally concentrate our attention upon the innocent people and try to convince them to become actually devotees, give up their propensity to try to lord it over the material world and enjoy it for themselves without utilizing it in Krishna service, or imagining themselves to be the controllers and the benefactors and saviors of everyone else in this world. Therefore, sometimes we think that the hardcore demons who are only interested in lording it over the material nature and stealing from everyone, if they see that you have, after they've stolen all your bank account, if they see you have one penny left in your pocket, they become envious of you and want to steal that penny too. How dare this person keep a penny in his pocket? That's not mine. So these are really hardcore demons in the mode of ignorance. And of course, there is always in the mode of passion, trying to get everyone to exploit the material nature cooperatively. As all to get together as friends and find some weaker nation or some weaker group of people and exploit them. But then ultimately they wind up, after exploiting everyone else they can, then they wind up trying to exploit each other because it's a habit. It's a bad habit. But above that are the saviors, the good people in the world who are trying to do good and help people and enlighten them. But often they themselves believe that they're God. And the proof of that is how many people they're supporting and saving, etc. So these people are also undesirable association. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, when he was asked, what is the symptoms of devotee? He said, asat sanga tyag e vaishnava char, stri sangi eka asadu krishna bhakta ar. So not only those who are interested in gross sense gratification or lording it over the material nature, but even those who don't recognize Krishna or refuse to recognize that there is a God superior to themselves and say that actually they're the good people in the world, they're the ones who are actually helping everyone because God couldn't do it. Because God couldn't feed the poor and the starving, therefore we're going to feed the poor and the hungry. Because we're better than God. God's indifferent. He has no power. He has no power to do so. And therefore, we're the real friends and saviors of everyone. So there's also a materialistic, demoniac mentality, and we should avoid it. So I'll stop there. Should avoid those people who have it too. Any questions, comments? Whenever we ask questions, everything becomes very peaceful. People stop thinking, even the air starts moving. Yes.
Real necessity is our need or it's our anxiety? I mean, why do we need material possession or we can survive without that?
Well, you can try. We'll see how long you can do without it. I mean, some people can do a lot better. Even Dhruva Maharaj, it took him 6 months with a little practice, by which he stopped breathing. We probably need a little bit more than 6 months. I mean, most of us don't even know how to breathe, what to speak of stopping breathing. We should probably learn how to breathe first before we stop. And what to speak of water. Try and do without water for a few days and see how you feel. See how enthusiastic you are for devotional service. Or just, see how you feel on a fast day. So if you don't feel like you want to do without material necessities, just fast for a few days. See what happens.
Weakness.
Well, we know ultimately the soul doesn't need anything but Krishna. But right now we don't have Krishna so much. Therefore we probably need a few things so that we can utilize this body to become Krishna conscious. Weakness, obviously we're not very strong. It shouldn't surprise us. Since we're only 1/10,000th size, tip of hair in size, you wouldn't expect such a person so small to do very much. It's like if a person walked in here who was 1/10,000th size, tip of hair in size, it'd be a hard time figuring out how you're going to engage him. What could he do? Lift that atom and bring it over there. So we are very weak. Therefore, we have to do what Krishna wants us to do. And right now, Krishna probably doesn't. It wouldn't be a good idea to try to do without too many material things. We need some material things just to perform our devotional service. But we don't need so many things that we spend all our time just collecting things and we never do any service. Yeah. Do you ever see a devotee act like a demon? Tell the truth. Yeah, well, we're aspiring to become devotees. An actual devotee, one who's actually in love with Krishna, who's devoted to Krishna, he'll never act like a demon. But those who are aspiring, therefore, Krishna says, a man must elevate himself by his own mind, not degrade himself. That the mind is the friend of the conditioned soul, but it can be his enemy as well. So we're in between. We have demoniac tendencies, but we're also aspiring to become devotees. Therefore, sometimes we do the right thing and sometimes we don't.
What we can do when a devotee acts like a demon against us?
Nothing. The devotee acts like a demon against us, then we should take shelter of Krishna and he'll tell us what to do. He knows what to do. So unless we ask Krishna what to do, then we're on the same platform as a devotee who's acting, who forgot to take shelter of Vishnu. So if we forget to take shelter of Vishnu, then we just fight with each other uselessly. So if we don't know what to do, better off going away. We should only do something when we know what Krishna wants us to do. And in order to know what Krishna wants us to do, Krishna says, Amadi dvam, adami dvam, ahimsa shanti arjavam, acharya pasanam socham, stiryam atma vinigraha. Our first consideration is to be humble and to admit that we don't know what to do. Then we after being humble, then we have to, Amadi dvam, adami dvam, we should give up our false pride, ahimsa, and try not to be violent, arjavams, and be simple. And then we should approach a bona fide source, like the bona fide spiritual master, and inquire from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, what should we do in a humble way, in a simple way. And when we see what's to be done, when Krishna makes it clear to us by the super soul inspiring us to understand what Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra is saying, when it becomes clearer, then we can act in a decisive way as a servant to Krishna, and then we'll be doing the right thing because we'll be serving Krishna properly.
What I did is hand Hare Krishna when that happens, and then I bow. That's what I did.
What did you do?
When that some incident happened, I just hand Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, and then I did that, and then about.
Well, that's good to chant Hare Krishna, but we also have to use our intelligence. So, because Krishna, he knows exactly what we're supposed to do. So the chanting will help us purify our consciousness. But we shouldn't, just because we chant Hare Krishna, it doesn't mean we automatically, immediately know what to do. It will help us. But we should seriously consider all the different circumstances, and when things are clear, then we should act. But the first thing we should do is chant Hare Krishna, of course, and that will bring us to the platform of understanding what we should do.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande Haribol.
Ki Jai.